Okay. For this retreat, I choose two or three sutta from Anguttara Nikaya. Number one is Anguttara from Anguttara Nikaya 4, through exertion. This sutta will give you a lot of knowledge. And this sutta solve one frequently asked question. Is it necessary to achieve jhana in order to see nirvana? This is frequently asked question. So when we go through two sutta, then the answer will come clear to you. Okay, let us start with the sutta first. And first of all, if you have question, you don't interrupt me first. We have 15 minutes for question and answer. This is for easy recording. Okay, so the sutta starts. Bhikkhus, they are these four kinds of persons found existing in the world. What for? Number one, here some person attains nibbana through exertion in this very life. Number two, another person attains nibbana through exertion with the breakup of the body, mean before death. Number three, still another person attains nibbana without exertion in this very life. And number four, and still another person attains nibbana without exertion with the breakup of the body. And Buddha explained in detail. And how, bhikkhus, does a person attain nibbana through exertion in this very life? Here a bhikkhu draws contemplating the unattractiveness of the body. We call asubha, contemplate the 32 impure parts of the body. And also perceiving the repulsiveness of food. This is also one type of meditation. And number third, perceiving non-delight in the entire world. After I will explain in detail. Contemplating impermanence in all conditioned phenomena. And he has the perception of death well established internally. So when a person want to attain nibbana through exertion in this very life, I think he got to learn these five things. Number one is asubha, unattractiveness, contemplating the unattractiveness of the body, and perceiving the repulsiveness of food. And third, perceiving non-delight in the entire world. And number four, contemplating impermanence in all conditioned phenomena. And number five, he has the perception of death. And when you master this five, it's still not enough. Buddha said, he dwells depending upon these five trini powers. The power of faith, the power of moral shame, the power of moral dread, the power of energy, and the power of wisdom. These five faculties arise in him prominently. Now another five faculties. These five faculties different from the five trini powers. So these five faculties are the faculties of faith, the faculty of energy, the faculty of mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. These are five faculties. And because these five faculties are prominent, he attains nibbana through exertion in this very life. This is how a person attains nibbana through through exertion in this very life. And another person attain Nibbana through exertion with the breakup of the body. I mean also in this very life, but before death. So what's the difference? Number two, number second type of person with the number first type of person. The difference is the five faculty for second type of person. The five faculties arise in him feebly, not strong, not prominently. So the second type of person, he also master the contemplating of unattractiveness of the body, he perceives the repulsiveness of food, and perceiving non-delight in the entire world, contemplating impermanent in all conditioned phenomena, and he has the perception of death. And he also trained in five training powers. But unfortunately, the five faculties of faith, energy, mindfulness and concentration and wisdom arise in him feebly, not strong, not prominently. Therefore, he only can attain Nibbana with the breakup of the body, meaning before death. This is how a person attain Nibbana, through exertion with the breakup of the body. Now let us see the third type of person. And how does a person attain Nibbana without exertion in this very life? Here, secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in the first jhana, the second jhana, the third jhana, and the fourth jhana. He dwells depending upon these five trini powers, the powers of faith, the power of energy, the power of moral shame, the power of moral dread, and the power of wisdom. And because this another five faculties arise in him also prominently. And because these five faculties are prominent, he attains Nibbana without exertion in this very life. This is how a person attains Nibbana without exertion in this very life. So what's the difference now, the first type of person and the third type of person? Do you see the difference? From my point of view, the first type of person without jhana. Without jhana, he trained in impermanence in all conditioned things. He see the unattractiveness of the body. And he also trained in five training powers. But the most important, the five faculties arise in him prominently. And the third type of person, he only trained in jhana. He trained in jhana, then from jhana, he moved to vipassana. And if his five controlling faculties are prominent, then he attained Nibbana in this life. And therefore, Buddha says, this person attained Nibbana without exertion in this very life. Why without exertion? When we say with exertion, means you have put a lot of effort. You put a lot of effort as an insight meditator. Every time you have to see impermanence, suffering and non-self of conditioned phenomena. All this, when you see impermanence, suffering and non-self, you feel very disgust. Sometimes the mind want to turn away from the world. It's very stressful to see, constantly see anicca, dukkha, anatta, impermanence, suffering and non-self. But for jhana, for the third type of person, because this person has jhana, therefore he has peace. His mind is at ease. So he does not strive as the insight meditator. his meditation is very smooth because with jhana. Anytime he feels disgusted toward the world, he just enter into the jhana and join the jhana bliss. Then he come out again to see anicca, dukkha, anatta again. If he feels disgusted again, he enter into jhana again. So come out from jhana, enter into jhana. So his striving is called without exertion. Not like first type of person. First type of person, he keep on seeing impermanent. So he has to strive very hard to strive very hard. Because when you see impermanent, there's no way to run away from it. And yet you have no jhana. You cannot rest your mind in the jhana. So sometimes you feel very disenchanted, very disgust toward the world. And yet you cannot commit suicide. So therefore, it's very a lot of suffering. Therefore Buddha said, with exertion. And the third one, without exertion. Exertion. Okay, let us see the fourth one. And how does a person attain Nibbana without exertion? With the breakup of the body. Here, secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in the first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, and fourth jhana. He dwells depending upon these five trini powers: the power of faith, the power of energy, the power of moral shame, the power of moral dread, and the power of wisdom. And these five faculties arise in him feebly, not strong. What are the five faculties? The faculty of faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. And because these five faculties are feeble, he attains Nibbana without exertion with the breakup of the body. This is how a person attains Nibbana without exertion with the breakup of the body. These bhikkhus are the four kinds of persons found existing in the world. So now, do you understand this, the difference among these four types of person? In the first place, you must understand first, then I will go into detail. Okay. Then we come back to the first type of person first. How to practice? Now we come to a practical way. So the first type of person attain Nibbana through exertion in this very life. Here, a bhikkhu dwells contemplating the unattractiveness of the body. This is called asubha kamatana. Contemplating the impure, 32 impure parts of the body. I think most of them heard about this one. This is one of the kamatana necessary, compulsory to be practiced by a monk. By a monk during Buddha's time. There are four we call protective meditation: metta, asubha, buddha nusati, and death, contemplating of death. These four are protective meditation that must be practiced by the monk during Buddha's time. Okay. So contemplating the unattractiveness of the body, first we divide the body into 32 parts. And this 32 part can divide into 6 groups. For example, first group, head hair, body hair, nail, teeth, skin. First group. So a meditator has to discern one by one. Learn by heart first the name: head hair, body hair, nail, teeth, skin. Anyone want to try this one, you just learn this 5 enough. 5 also enough to attend jhana. Because to learn 32 parts, maybe too many subjects. So just learn 5: head hair, body hair, nail, teeth, skin. Can remember? Once more: head hair, body hair, nail, teeth, skin. This 5 again. forward, backward. Backward means skin, teeth, nail, body hair, head hair. Forward, backward, forward, backward. Again, when you learn my heart, then you keep attention when you recite head hair. You keep attention on the head hair. Then try to reflect why it is unattractive. For example, when you sweat, your hair is tinted with all the sweat. Then the smell. When you do not wash your hair, then for 1 week or for 2 weeks, the smell come up from the hair. So then you contemplate impure, 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 until you feel a sense of impurity arise in your mind. And then you move to the second one, head hair, body hair. Choose any part of the body hair which you feel impure. Then again, you contemplate impure, keeping the body hair in the mind, then mentally say impure, impure, or repulsive, repulsive. Then the nail also. When you cut the nail, you try to smell it, you feel the foul smell. And teeth also. In the morning, when we get up, we didn't brush our teeth. Then you will know how repulsive it smells. Head hair, body hair, nail, teeth, skin. Skin, you can see, try to reflect, there are many pores in the skin, on the skin, on the surface of the skin. So this five, you contemplate again and again and again, until you feel a sense of unattractiveness or repulsiveness arise in you. The purpose of this practice is to overcome the lust towards the opposite sex. Because for a monk, he had to abstain from sexual intercourse. So he had to practice this one in case the lust arises in him. He can use this antidote to overcome the arising lust. Similarly for bhikkhuni, for female nuns. Also, she got to contemplate this impure to overcome her lust towards the man. And this is the first reason. The second reason, this 32 part also can produce concentration. One also can attain concentration, but not as deep as anapanasati, through the unattractiveness of the body. Okay, the second one, perceiving the repulsiveness of food. Anyone delights in food can be a hindrance, especially when you come for retreat, because you eat what people serve you. So sometimes the food may not suitable for you, or the food may not the type you want. So your mind become, your desire is unfulfilled. When your desire is unfulfilled, the mind becomes agitated. Even during meditation, you think of your favorite food, and your mind is just irritating. So it becomes a hindrance. Therefore, in order to overcome all the hindrances and all the obstacles that block the way, we sometimes have to contemplate the repulsiveness of food, so that we were not overeating. Overeating. Overeating causes drowsiness, laziness in oneself. So how to contemplate the repulsiveness of food? In Visuddhi Magga, he gives many ways to help. But I think the best way and the most easy way is you put a mouthful of food into your mouth and chewing it. Before you swallow, you spit out. You spit out and see again. See whether you want to eat it again or not. So if you don't want to eat it again, it means that you now perceive the repulsiveness of the food. This is the most easy way to arouse your repulsiveness, towards the food. So whenever you want to eat more, before you swallow more, you just spit out, spit out onto your plate, and mix with the old food. Then I think you want to stop already, enough for today. Okay, so this is how we can reflect, contemplate the repulsiveness of the food. For monk, it's also very important, because when the monk go for Phindabat, sometimes they get a lot of food, nearly full, the bowl nearly full. So if he didn't have this perception of repulsiveness of food, he will just keep on eating, eating, eating until too full. Then after that, he go and sleep. So such monk is not worthy of offering, because he enjoys his life. But his food come from people's generosity. So in order not to encourage the monastic to overeat, so we contemplate the repulsiveness of food so that we were not overeating. Okay. And the third one, perceiving non-delight in the entire world. This is one type of inside knowledge. And this inside knowledge comes from contemplating impermanence in all conditioned phenomena. How can one perceive non-delight in the world or disenchantment? Disenchantment with the whole world. How can we be? How can we achieve this state? Unless you have seen, you have experienced the insight of impermanence and suffering and non-self. If not, you cannot have this disenchantment with the whole world, or you cannot have this non-delight in the entire world. In the Kirimananda Sutta, Buddha gives the meaning. What it means, non-perceiving, non-delight in the entire world. In Girimananda Sutta, Buddha talked about 10 perception. 10 perception. And one of the perception is non-delight. Anabirata sanya. Non-delight in the whole world. And what it means, Buddha said, now what ananda is the perception of non-delight in the whole world. Here ananda. A monk, in regard to whatever in the world, are selfish means and attachments, or mental determinations, settle belief, whatever settle belief you have, and tendency, any tendency, especially the latent tendency we have. So giving this up. Not being attached, even not being attached to your view, not attached to your settled belief, not attached to any of your mental determination, any of your decision. So not being attached, he abstained from them. This ananda is the perception of non-delight in the whole world. This is the meaning of what Buddha said. But another, as I say, in order to reach this state, you must have experienced the insight of impermanency, the insight of arising and passing away. Because the insight of arising and passing away, when you experience it, you feel very stressful, very stressful. Everything seems beyond your control. Everything arise and pass away, arise and pass away, beyond your control. So you feel disenchanted. you feel disgust, you don't want it anymore. Only then you can reach this state, non-delight in the whole world. Okay. Then we will go to the next. Contemplating impermanent in all conditioned phenomena. Contemplating impermanence in all conditioned phenomena. Let us understand what is conditioned phenomena first. Now I need you to participate a little bit. Huh? What is conditioned phenomena? Delicious food, okay. What do you understand conditioned phenomena? Sankhara Dhamma.
Beautiful house,
okay. These are all worldly things, huh? Worldly phenomena.
Condition comes from the word the dependent origination. So the rise because of condition. So the cease because of
condition. Condition, okay. So this is the explanation, the conditioned Dhamma. So but what are they? You are trying to explain the conditioned Dhamma, but what are they? For example, what are the things belong to conditioned Dhamma?
Whatever we experience through the five senses.
So yes. Yes, very good. Number one is five senses. Eye, ear, nose, tongue, body. These are conditioned Dhamma. And another one, external object. Eye sees visible object. Ear hears sound. Nose smell the odor. Tongue tastes the taste. Body touch the tangible. And the mind think of Dhamma. So these six internal faces and six external faces are called conditioned Dhamma. Another way of explaining it is five aggregates. Five aggregates also consider conditioned Dhamma. Six sense bases and six sense objects and five aggregates are same things, but Buddha explained it in another way only. What are the five aggregates? Form aggregates, form in body. Then feeling aggregate, perception aggregate,
formation
aggregate, yes, consciousness aggregate. All these are conditioned Dhamma. Conditioned Dhamma means they arise based on causes, not without causes. Body arise with causes. Feeling arise with causes. Our perception arise with causes. Consciousness also arise with causes. For example, body arise depend on what? On what? Body cannot arise simply. But body is a concept. Ultimately, body consists of four elements. Earth, water, fire, air. So these four elements arise depend on what? They cannot arise by themselves, not without reason. They arise on karma. Our past karma, our mind. How the mind can produce four elements? For example, now I feel very happy. When I feel very happy, my four elements also become very active, or not active, become very light. So this is how mind can produce four elements in the body. If I feel sorrow, then my four elements become very heavy, lifeless, heavy, and so on. So this is how mind affect the body. Happy mind, positive mind, then the body also become healthy. Then the third reason is ahara, the food we eat, also affect our body. Then the fourth one, temperature. So if the weather is so hot, we feel very uneasy, because temperature affects the four elements in the body as well. When weather is cold, then the four elements appear another way. When weather is hot, then four elements is in another way. So these four causes affect the four elements in the body. Therefore, they are called four elements of body is called conditioned dharma. They produced by causes. Okay, feeling also. Our feeling, we have three types of feeling: pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. Why pleasant feeling arise? Why? You all have pleasant feeling, but why the pleasant feeling arise in you? Greed is not the greed is one of the cause, but not the near cause. Contact. Pleasant feeling arise because let's say my eye, or say let's say you like to listen to Dhamma talk. So when you listen to Dhamma talk, then pleasant feeling arise because of what? Ear contact. Because the Dhamma, the sound, the Dhamma voice sound come to contact to the ear, then you have pleasant feeling. So this is called near cause, direct cause. There are other causes. For example, your delight in the Dhamma is also one of the cause for the feeling to arise, but this is not a direct cause. The direct cause is contact. So all feelings, pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, neither pleasant nor unpleasant, all arise owing to contact. When your mind think of, let's say, your mind think of something pleasant, then this is a contact in the mind. Because you think of something, you think of your beloved daughter, your beloved husband, your beloved wife, there's a mind contact, then the pleasant feeling arises in you. So contact is the direct cause for different types of feelings. Okay, then perception. What is the cause for perception to arise? You perceive something beautiful, you perceive something ugly. How can seeing arise? This is not a direct cause. Also contact. How can you perceive something pleasant? Because there's contact first. Eye contact. When I see you, I perceive she's good, she's not good. Because of eye contact. Ear contact also. When somebody abuse you, there's ear contact, then unpleasant feeling arise. Unpleasant feeling, then you perceive this sound is undesirable. You perceive it as undesirable because of contact. Then another one, formation aggregate. What's the cause for formation aggregate to arise?
Contact.
Also contact, yes. And the last one, consciousness. Consciousness. What is the cause for the consciousness to arise?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Also contact.
Oh, sorry. This time you are wrong. Same in Taiwan, when I ask people, okay, what is the cause for feeling contact? What is the cause for perception contact? What is the cause for formation contact? The last one, also contact. No, the last one is not contact. What is the cause for your mind to arise? Okay. Direct cause is nama rupa, mind and matter. Because according to Abhidhamma, mind must draw in somewhere, in a heart base. So without this mind, without this dwelling place, the mind cannot arise. So the base, the heart base is the cause for consciousness to arise. Of course contact is also one, but it's not mentioned direct, it's not mentioned as direct cause. Then consciousness cannot arise alone. What is the function, what is the characteristic of consciousness? Just know only. But whether, let's say I see one thing, I know I see one thing, but whether this, is it blue color, red color, white color, I do not know. Consciousness cannot know. So in order to know clearly, oh, this is woman, this is man, this is house, this is apple, consciousness need the help of mental factors. other mental factors, for example, perception, formation, in attention and so on, so that the consciousness can see clearly. Therefore, the cause for arising of consciousness is mind, is matter, is nama rupa, matter and mental factor. Consciousness cannot arise alone. This is according to Abhidhamma. So these five aggregates are conditioned dharma. They arise due to causes. The most important teaching of the Buddha is what? What do you think? The most important teaching of the Buddha?
Ultimate truth.
Ultimate truth is one. Okay, four noble truths. If you study clearly, what is this four noble truths? Four noble truths is also cause and effect. It's also cause and effect. Yeah, you see, the noble truth of suffering is effect. The truth, the origin of suffering is cause. Then the cessation of suffering is effect. The path leading to the cessation of suffering is cause. So the four noble truths, the four noble truths are also cause and effect. So what is the most outstanding of teaching, the teaching of Buddha, is cause and effect. Cause and effect, dependent origination. Nothing arises without cause. And the cause can be traced. This is very important. The cause can be traced. Karma. Karma is one. There are many. And the important teaching of Buddha is Buddha never say one cause, one effect. No such thing. One cause caused this one. It's only this cause. No. Many causes, many effects. But dependent origination only mentioned one cause. Because of ignorant formation. Because formation, consciousness. No. Dependent origination mentioned only one cause because it mentions the predominant cause only. This is the most predominant cause, ignorant. Because of ignorant, then formation. But there are also other causes. Craving is also the cause. Without craving, how can you perform karma? So craving is also the cause, but it's not mentioned directly because at that moment, at that time, ignorance is the main cause. So we only mention the main cause, but there are also other causes that support the main cause. So this is the special teaching of the Buddha, cause and effect, causal relationship or dependent origination. And four noble truth is the peculiar teaching of the Buddha, and four noble truth is also causal relationship. Okay. So why I mention all this conditioned phenomena, and the purpose I mention all conditioned phenomena because I want to try to explain to you all conditioned phenomena are impermanence. So before we can understand impermanence, we must understand what are impermanence, right? What are impermanent? What subject, what things are impermanent that we must contemplate it as impermanent? So what are the things? What things are impermanent? Then you have to answer conditioned phenomena are impermanent. And what are the conditioned phenomena? Six sense spaces, six sense objects, five aggregates, four elements. All these are called conditioned phenomena. They are produced by causes, and the causes are impermanent. If the causes are impermanent, how can the effect be permanent? Therefore, causal relationship also impermanent. So if you can understand this sentence, contemplating impermanent in all conditioned phenomena, then you know how to practice insight meditation. some people they do not know how to practice insight meditation because they don't understand Buddha's teaching thoroughly. Whatever arises from your mind and body, they are conditioned phenomena. And whatever conditioned phenomena are to be contemplated as impermanence. However, we always forget. Although we have been exposed to the teaching of Buddha for many times, all are impermanent. But when the emotion comes, we never think it's impermanent. We cling to the emotions. We cling to our happiness, we cling to our sorrow as permanence, as self. And because of this, suffering follow us. Suffering never depart because of our clinging. But people may think, if I just contemplate impermanent, they say, how to contemplate impermanent? Whatever arises in our mind and body, you mentally say impermanent, impermanent, impermanent. But people argue, this only mentally say only. Can you really see impermanent? Of course, in the beginning you cannot. Not possible. But if you do not contemplate impermanent, impermanent, then what happens in your mind? Let's say your emotion comes, sorrow comes. Then you say, I contemplate impermanent, also it is there, it does not pass away. Then what should you contemplate? Let me know. Rising and passing away is impermanent, but because you say people argue, I contemplate impermanent, it's still there. Okay, then no need to contemplate. Then no need to contemplate. How are you going to deal with your sorrow? How? This is one way. Another way, one way. Then how are you going to deal with your sorrow? How are you going to deal with your emotion? You just carried away by it. Then if you're carried away by your emotion, you are not practitioner. What you have learned so far cannot be applied, right? Therefore, if even though you contemplate it as impermanent, 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 it does not pass away. It is still very useful. First, it changes your perverted perception of permanent. One moment you note impermanent, 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 it try to educate you. Because if you do not contemplate, you will perceive it as permanent. You will perceive it wrongly as permanent, permanent. But if you contemplate it as impermanent, impermanent, then it educate you that it is impermanent, indirectly. It teaches you the truth. This is the first benefit. The second benefit is, as we know, Buddha said, sabbe sankhara anicca. All compounded things are impermanent. Buddha said many times, from he gained enlightenment after his final passing away, he tell the same thing. All conditions are impermanent. All conditions are impermanent. So this is the truth. But if our mentality, when any emotion, suffering arises, any misfortunate misery arise in the mind, if we think it as permanent, 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 and Buddha say impermanent, 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 so we go different direction. We never come, the path will never merge, because when you contemplate it, or not to say contemplate it, because our ignorance perceive it, our perverted or distorted perception perceive it as permanent, permanent, then you deviated from the truth. What Buddha say? Impermanent, impermanent. So if your mentality or your this your perception is deviated from the truth, you will never arrive the truth. You are far away from arriving the truth, right? Therefore, if you contemplate impermanent, 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 you harmonize. Your mentality harmonize in concord with the truth. When your mentality in concord or harmonize or called synchronize with the truth, and the truth will reveal to you vividly. The truth will reveal to you very clearly, because your mentality is your mentality arrive at the truth. This is the second benefit. The third benefit, if you contemplate impermanent, 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 then this the power of the words. This impermanent has its power. Immediately it teaches you to let go. To let go of that state. To let go of your suffering. To let go of your emotion. To let go of your unwholesome mental state. Because it is impermanent. How can we cling to? How can we cling to it? We cannot cling to it. We have to let it go. Therefore, seeing all this benefit, whether we really see it passes away or not, we have to contemplate it as impermanent. So to keep the mentality in concord with the truth, synchronized with the truth, and they will come a day when your mindfulness and wisdom is matured. The moment you contemplate impermanent, immediately you can see this mental phenomena, conditioned phenomena, arising, passing away. And this can happen at any time, any moment. Even you are walking, even you are washing your bowl, even you are going toilet, this insight can come any time, any moment. Not necessary during sitting meditation. Okay? Okay. Okay, and the last one, and he has the perception of that well established internally. This is also very important meditation, contemplate of that. Contemplate of that should be practiced by each of us at least 10 minutes a day. If not, we always forget we will die. We are very forgetful. We enjoy life, always forget one day we will die. So every 10 minutes, even in this retreat, so spend 10 minutes, try to contemplate death. How to contemplate? You can contemplate death will come anytime, any moment. And think of somebody who last time enjoyed life, now has passed away already. Think of those passengers in MH370. How they know they are going to die? If they know, nobody will go, right? But they do not know. In the same way, we also do not know when, which moment, which time, in which country, in what situation. We do not know. We do not know at all. Therefore, we can take this opportunity to contemplate that. We will also like them. One day, suddenly, that just come without giving us time to say goodbye to our family members. No time to say goodbye. And nobody can say this will not happen to me. No, my karma is very good. No, this will not happen to me. No. This happened not because of pleasant karma. This happened because of previous karma. Past life karma you have done already. There's no time to repent. No time to say, I repent it. Chanhui. No. Whatever karma we have performed, it leaves the impression, imprint in our heart, in our mind. When time comes, you just have to go. No time to say, give me one more minute, two more minutes, three more minutes, no. Therefore, if you can contemplate that every time, every day, at least 10 minutes, that can come any time, any moment. See those who were your friend, now already dead. and try to imagine, try to reflect that will come, and we will die. Do know we will not how to say? We do know how we will die, huh? In what situation? In which place? In which country? Maybe not at home, huh? Maybe outside, or maybe car accident, air accident or train accident, or maybe sickness, disease. One of what I just heard, one of the mante from Johor Bahru passed away, and I asked the person what is the disease, and she told me infection. So we also never think that infection will kill us, right? The mante in Johor Bahru, in where? Batu Pahat lah. I think only 50 something. 50 something died in the hospital because of infection. So we also never think infection will cause death to us. So the death spare no one. So if we can contemplate death, then we have more energy to strive. We don't find excuse. We don't find many excuses to delay our practice. Therefore, this contemplation of death can give you tremendous energy, tremendous spiritual urgency to continue to practice. Okay, so this person try to practice maybe this five, all these five. That is contemplating unattractiveness of the body, perceiving the repulsiveness of food, perceiving non-delight in the entire world, and contemplating impermanence in all conditioned phenomena. And he has the perception of that well established internally. And he dwells depending upon these five trinity powers. The power of faith, moral shame, moral dread, energy, and the power of wisdom. For this one, we should continue tomorrow. Now the five training power. For discussion. Open for discussion about we have talked just now. Yes. This I say 10 minutes. Not every day. I think if you contemplate the debt every day, are you single or married?
I have a family.
Oh, maybe soon you will depart your family and become monk. So if you contemplate debt every day, you just want to meditate only. You just want to practice. You don't want to cling to many things in the world. This is the result. But if you reach a state that become depressed, then you got to change the meditation subject. Practice metta, practice other things. Therefore, important to learn 1 or 2, 3 meditation. One cannot, sometimes difficult comes, you have to learn, take up another one to overcome this one. Right? Like we learn many meditation. I learn asubha, contemplation of that. I practice many meditation, vipassana, anapana, depend on situation. Not every time I practice anapana. When I walking, I contemplate that. Different stages of that and so on. So when you feel lazy, contemplate that is very good. Okay? Yes?
There's this so-called power of thinking. So you think about when you reach, you become rich. So you think about to die, you die soon or not?
No. If I'm going to die, then I will die soon. Then karma is not correct already. Then the theory, the law of karma, is to be defeated.
No. Parana.
We also become die early. No such thing. No. That's why I say, when you feel that you become depressed, when you think of death, soon I am dying, I'm going to die, I'm going to die, you overshoot the target already, you overshoot the target. Then you got to change meditation subject already. Then quickly practice loving kindness meditation. Let the mind happy.
Because Ajahn Brahm taught us in the walking meditation. First step you say, I will die. Next step you say, that is for sure.
Then people.
Then you think of it for very sure, very soon.
No, so if you, if Ajahn Brahm teach you, then after finish the retreat, no one die, right? I mean the thinking doesn't make you dead. No, it's just to boost the energy, the spiritual urgency only. No. And you know the time to stop also. When you feel that the urgency is too great, you cannot carry on anymore. You got to stop. Change the object. That's why you say this first person, person attain nirvana through exertion. A lot of effort. Not like jhana. Jhana is very blissful. When nimitta come, oh, so blissful. You can sit 3 hours, 4 hours, no pain, no, you know. But this one, contemplate death, contemplate impermanent, a lot of suffering. That's why you need exertion. Okay, any other question? Just now, Sunhua, you say the mind is, Dhammapada say mind is foreigner. The one is, that Dhammapada say the mind is foreigner, mind mate is there. Then whoever act with evil mind, then the suffering follows one. That Buddha want to say, the evil and the good depend on the mind. Doesn't mean that thinking, when I think I will die and I will really die. Not that. It's not that meaning. Yeah? It's just say that evil and bad all depend on the mind. Yeah. You fear of death?
One day you'll die.
So, so then no need to fear of it. One of my students said that he listened I say in this round of samsara, lunhoya rebirth, we have died many times already. Our bones, if we count how many times we have died, all the bones, we put all the bones or corpse, it's like Himalaya mountain. So if we have to die one more time, never mind. One more time. We have been dying many. We have died many times already. We have been dying so many times. This life, one more time, never mind. Then when my student heard me tell like that, he say his fear of death, 50% gone already. Gone 50%. So go see and see and just buy there. Great, see just buy very keen. Okay, any other question?
This
not necessarily jhana. Concentration, like the unattractiveness is concentration meditation. It's considered concentration meditation. That is also concentration meditation, but not jhana. And the perceiving the repulsiveness of food also, because you keep on thinking one thing, that will come. You also give you concentration. So it also. Develop concentration, but not jhana concentration. Jhana concentration is for third type of person. Yes, okay. I know before you ask this question, when I reach this, I also will tell what's the meaning of samma samadhi. I also will say first jhana, second, third jhana, fourth jhana. No? Then how to counter attack this question? So I prepare another sutta. The following sutta, conjunction. You see the following sutta, the conjunction. And this conjunction, it mentioned, we are not going to read this one. I will read this one when I reach this one. He said the four type of person, when they attain nibbana, by what way they attain nibbana. Then here say the first way is he developed insight preceded by serenity. I mean he developed samatha first, then insight. Then he attained arahant. Okay? The second way, he practiced insight first, then concentration, then attain arahant. The third way, he practiced insight and concentration together, yoke together. This is the way I used to practice, the third way. And number fourth way, no jhana at all. No concentration at all. You see the number fourth way. Can you read number fourth way? Can you all read? You see, again, a bhikkhu's mind is seized by restlessness about the Dharma, but there comes an occasion when his mind becomes internally steady, composed, unified, and concentrated. Then the path is generated in him. So this person, because a mind here, restless is not a good translation. Again, a bhikkhu's mind is seized by, I think, is spiritual urgency. Sometimes the mind seized by spiritual urgency, then suddenly the mind become composed, settled down, and the time, the path is born. This can happen at any time, any moment. Like Ananda, Venerable Ananda. He strived very hard because before, when Buddha passed away, Mahakasapa called the meeting, want to preserve the Dharma. So he called 500 arahant to attend this meeting. Ananda is one. But at that time, Ananda was not arahant. So 499 are arahant, Ananda is not arahant. So Ananda feel very shameful. So he strive before the meeting. He strive very hard. Strive very hard, walking, sitting. And he walk too much because he afraid sitting cause sleepiness. So he walk a lot until he feel very exhausted. He said, too tired, cannot already. I'm going to lie down, he said. So he lie down mindfully, lying down. Before his head touched the pillow, he become arahant. So the path can be born any time, any moment. When the mind is seized with spiritual urgency, then suddenly become composed, settled down, then the path is born. This is the four type of person. So from this, then we say the time samadhi is not needed in this place. And Visuddhimagga explain what is the meaning of samadhi, right concentration. He said upachara until arupa jhana. Upachara means excess concentration is also included in samadhi. So no jhana, the one is no jhana. Therefore, when people frequently ask me this question, what do you think? Everywhere I go, people ask, do you think we need jhana in order to attain nibbana? I always tell the point of my view. I feel that for my view, I always answer for sotapanna, stream enterer, Sakadagami, once returner. I think no need jhana. Anagami maybe. Arahant For anagami to attain jhana is very easy because all hindrances are destroyed already. But for commentary say that there is dry inside arahant who have no jhana. This are mentioned in the commentary. But my point of view, I think jhana may be necessary, maybe only necessary to attain anagami. But commentary say not necessary.
Okay.
Yes, right. That's why he said my exertion. That's why I chose this sutta because it's very controversial. The first person he said that need exertion, but he didn't mention jhana. Only the third person mentioned jhana, need jhana. So I'm going to learn by heart because I have to face many people ask me questions. I got to quote this sutta to convince them. Sushima, yes. Different.
The northern there's no need jhana at all. Whereas in the southern they are mentioned about jhana. So there is always an argument whether you need or don't need from that.
Right.
So in fact I do read that commentary mentioned you don't need jhana. In this sutta of the southern tradition also say you don't need jhana. Whereas in the Sushima
Sutta,
in the southern tradition you mentioned about no supernatural power.
That's why in Sushima Sutta, what Buddha said is supernatural power. Doesn't mean jhana.
The northern one says no jhana.
This is very controversial question. Even nowadays, still very controversial. When I was in USA, my student, a Jewish student, told me that according to Bhikkhu Bodhi master all the Tipitaka, although he's not a good meditator, he said that according to his understanding to all the Tipitaka, no need jhana. But Ajahn Brahm say need jhana because all the monks give their view mah. So he asked my view. I just told her, I told already what is my view. And this two sutta, the first sutta, the true exertion also support no need jhana. For first type of person, no need jhana. Only third type of person need jhana. And the following sutta in conjunction, also four type of person. Some jhana first, or some inside first, some jhana inside go together, and the last type of person, no need jhana. Also no need jhana. So this sutta continuously mentioned that is no need jhana. But without jhana, you need exertion, a lot of suffering. Buddha also mentioned. That I can understand very well. Because sometimes I also feel very disgust to the world. But don't know where to run. The only thing can run is run into jhana. Go into jhana, you will forget the suffering. So if your meditation is accompanied with jhana, your path is more smooth because there's a place for you to rest. Jhana is the place, resting place. You can rest in a jhana. When you feel a lot of suffering, impermanent, non-self, dukkha, then forget it first, rest in the jhana. Then after you recharge, refresh again, then you continue contemplate impermanent suffering again. But if without jhana, you don't know where to rest. So a lot of suffering. Therefore, it belongs to this type of person, belong to first type person. Attain dimana through exertion in this very life. Exertion, you need a lot of effort to face all the hardship and difficulties.
Just cannot go on with the actual jhana because it's too short duration and different object changing.
Upacara sama, but I cannot agree that momentary is equal to upacara samadhi. That I cannot agree, because momentary is moment to moment, moment to moment. Upacara samadhi still keep. It didn't change so frequent. For example, that can occur anytime, any moment. That can occur anytime, any moment. Then later you can that can occur when I'm young. It didn't change so much like momentary concentration. You still hold one object but in a bigger area, so you can reach upacara samadhi. But the one is not considered momentary only. But when you practice inside meditation, you move on, for example, from eye, you move on to ear, you move on to body sensation, see impermanent. So your mind keep on moving from one object to another object. Then it's called momentary concentration. Power still upacara deeper. Upacara is deeper. However, to me, this momentary concentration and upacara concentration is, we see it in the concentration method or concentration way. But for wisdom, momentary also can produce good, sharp wisdom. No wisdom. For example, you contemplate impermanent one object to another, also can give sharp wisdom. In the wisdom way, not the concentration way. But in the concentration way, upacara, the power of concentration in upacara, of course, higher than momentary. Because its object is narrowed down. If you narrow down the object, your concentration goes deeper. If you widen the object, the concentration become dispersed a little bit. Kunaratanas.
Saying that there's no depression when you do these inside meditations, you see all the rising and passing and the impermanence. There's no, you say it's actually quite joyful as an observer, and then you see a dynamic energy, which is changing all the time. That impression is a bit different from what Sally was describing, those who contemplate on the non-delight in the entire world. You get depressed, or you really be at peace and change, and then but you can go to China to rest. That's sort of different.
You see, anagami arahana, anagami and arahan, they can enter into one called Nirodha Samapatti. Nirodha Samapatti, Miet Chinting, Nirodha Samapatti. Why they want enter into Nirodha Samapatti? Why? Because they feel so disgust. They feel so disgust to the mind and body. They want to stop for a while. Just like what I mentioned just now. They want to stop for a while. They don't want to see anymore. So they enter into Nirodha Samapatti to let the mind and body cease. 1 day, 2 day, 3 day, 4 day, 6 day. Then they come again, face the world again. So from what they experience, you should be able to connect why they feel disgust. Because they keep on seeing impermanent. That insight, what you mentioned, that insight itself is not suffering. As you say, when you see arising, passing away, when I see this insight, I don't feel suffering. But when you reflect back, at that moment, no suffering. But you are seeing, keep on arising, passing, but after the insight passed, the insight lasts very short only. When you reflect back the time, you feel, suffering. It is very suffering. It is very stressful. Okay. And even the Visuddhimagga also say that when you reach inside of arising and passing away, it gives you joy also, happiness. But only during that moment. After that, when you reflect the time, you feel stressful, suffering.
That's
perception. You perceive what you have experienced. Then you feel it cannot be happiness. if there is happiness, no need to attain nibbana already. If inside, arising, passing away is always give you joy, happiness, then what for you enter nibbana? No need nibbana. Life so happy at arising, passing. No, not true. So only that moment give you happiness. After that, when you reflect again, you feel a lot, very stressful.
My daughter was trying to say, if you constantly practice the mindfulness, then you are not adding or subtracting the actual existence of reality. Problem with us, we have our own perception or concept based on the self.
Yes.
Mind,
yes.
It's all tight, being together, just react with whatever comes upon us. So that's the whole problem. Our will that. If you can maintain your mindfulness, then you will be in that state.
Yes.
Like I mentioned before, not really that depressing. I don't know why he's trying to encourage people to practice that and overemphasize on it or not, or whether it's quite true that shall I say, during that moment you feel quite joyful and not depressed.
Because at that moment your mind is dwell with the insight, but very short moment only, After that time is no suffering, only after that. After that when you reflect, but you don't reflect also, you don't feel the suffering also. Only when you reflect back, your perception, you perceive that anything arising and passing away cannot be joyful. That's what Buddha said, what is arising and passing away is suffering. This is the insight, this is suffering. But that insight very short only.
But if there's suffering to us, attached to the world, if the same thing or the same liberated one, they see the same phenomenon, but they are not suffering. They mentally, in their mind, they don't suffer from anymore.
You mean who?
The liberated.
Liberated one, yes.
The same existence, but they see in the right view, inside, they don't have this perception of suffering anymore. After we come out, we start to go back to the old thinking, old
energy. The liberated one, I think they still feel the. I can quote one sutta for you, Venerable Sariputta. He was accused by somebody, say one of the monks hit him without say sorry, without apologize. So he reported to the Buddha. Buddha say, okay, call Venerable Sariputta come. I question him. So when Venerable Sariputta came, then he told 9 ways his virtues. One is he said that just as a woman who have cleaned her body, then suddenly a carcass, a corpse, a dead body of snake hanging on her neck, and she feels so disgust. In the same way, I feel so disgust toward this body full of impurity. This is what she said. So she also feel very disgusting, but because this body is guo bao sheng ma, come from the past life ma, she feel disgust to it. But that type of disgust does not give to the hatred, does not give to the anger, because it's the reality, the impurity of the body, the disgusting is reality. He just bear with it only. This is what he said. So I feel that they still feel disgust towards this body. This is also one type of suffering. But his mind is completely free, but the body is still there. Time's up. Okay. That disgusted is not, maybe it's not what you think so disgusted. I think not so, I think it's very subtle stage. Not as you imagine so disgusted until I don't want to leave the world, not so strong. As I say, it's a split of second, he feel the rising and passing away is stressful. And then he can quickly go into jhana, don't want to see already. He can go direct his mind to the anapana and forget it and go into jhana. Because he has trained his mind into such a strong way, quick way, he can quickly change his perception. Even unrepulsive, he can change to repulsive. Even suffering, maybe he can change to happiness. He can change very fast already. Not, we cannot perceive how speedy they can change their mind. If there's question, I allow them to ask. If not, the doubt is unclear. Any other question? Then we can. Tatjana. Tatjana. Okay, if no question, we can we shall continue tomorrow. In Jaya, and you say the mindfulness, to have mindfulness constantly, only Arahant can do it. Arahant constantly have mindfulness. We cannot. Lapse here and there. That's how we suffer. Without mindfulness, we suffer one moment. Without mindfulness, we suffer again.
David has something to
offer. Okay.